been a very difficult week on so many levels, but I say my psyche is I think I'm feeling possibly strong or feeling some sense of possible empowerment. So that's good. Yeah, it's been a really hard week. Glenn and I just talked a lot, and I think what I'm trying to do is find a way to hold space for the apology that I wrote him, which is a genuine apology about how, I got to put on headphones, about how what I did was cruel and selfish and all those things, but and sleazy, which I think was true, but also not to, like, just hate myself to such a point that I feel like I shouldn't even be alive, which is, because it sort of felt like that was the logical conclusion. Like, if what I did was so horrible, then, you know, I would just have to hate myself and not have any compassion for or understanding of why I did what I did. So I'm trying to find a way to hold those two things together at once, to, you know, to understand that my apology for him is that I wrote, he wanted me to write this apology, and I did, and you know, I just read it over, and I do stand by the apology, but at the same time, I can't, you know, I also have to have, I have compassion for myself and why I did what I did. If I didn't, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't live with myself. So it's really a difficult situation to try to hold both of those things together at once, you know? Mm-hmm. Right. Right, exactly.
Adult and offering an apology for adult, I mean the word affairs in very broad terms,
right.
Adult rights.
Yeah.
They're two parts. This is why it's hard to reconcile because they both exist.
Yeah.
And one won't cancel out the other.
Right. The part that feels shame like a child or like property. I mean, I just tap into this whole like Old Testament judgmental thing. You know, all this, like, it's almost like the Old Testament language gets into my head and this Old Testament imagery that, you know, I should be stoned to death. Honestly, I keep having this feeling like that part of me feels like I should be stoned to death. And the other part...
That would be another part. That would be another part, by the way.
Okay. Not...
Just kind of try to make space inside, seeing what's going on.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the part that you said was apologizing in an adult way was the part... That, yeah, that's like owning what I did, but it is confusing. Like, you know, if I could take it all back, would I not do it again? I mean, so we just had this conversation where he just said, you know, he said the worst part was that I deceived him. And I said the reason I deceived him was because he literally said to me, if you don't end it this second, then our marriage is over. Like, he literally said that. And I didn't want to throw away my entire marriage. And so he says I should have just cut it off right then. But then there was the 20-year-old part of me that had never seen this guy in person ever, had never seen Peter in person, and had not seen Peter in person since all this started. And I wanted to see him one time. But so that, you know, I would have had to throw away that, betray that 20-year-old is how I felt. It was like he was making me choose. So... Then,
so inside you, it's important to validate Rachel's other parts. You have one that's speaking a very critical voice of Old Testament property.
Right.
And she, a 20-year-old that is saying, this was really important for me.
Right, right.
The apology part was not one that was just heaping shame on herself.
Right, right.
And their whole validating.
Yeah, oh wow, yeah. And then there's this other part, which is like the part that that's been researching, like, polyandry, and I've, you know, and I just feel there's this whole cultural weight to this, you know, like in South Africa, they tried to legalize polyandry because they've got legal polygamy, and these people were saying, well, if you can marry a lot of wives, why shouldn't you be able to marry more than one husband? This was just a couple of years ago, and they voted against it because they said it would destroy the family, and basically women don't have equal rights, and it also helps me understand my mother more because she basically practiced a kind of polyandry because she had that affair going forever. And so, yeah, there's this other part that's like, and I've been reading about polyandry, and it seems like a really good system. Like, in, there's a lot of parts of the world, Nepal and Tibet, where this is common, and it seems to work really well in a lot of ways. So there's this other part of me that's like, I'm beating myself up for this behavior that's so immoral according to this patriarchal system, but you know, it's not like it's unnatural to have these impulses. In fact, it feels like it might be the most natural thing. So
yes, I really get you, and you're considering the historical, the political, in terms of property and rights. You're considering the cultures for whom, in whom, and to polyandry is regular practice. What the society in the Amazon.
In Nepal.
It's just that way. It just, and I think probably still does. It's just an awareness that according to the teachings of that society, means responsibility to pleasure the woman. And,
yeah.
And that is, and that you do that, it's, you share yourself.
Yeah.
Share yourself wisely.
In the Amazon.
So, where is going the sociological critique with regard to property and women's rights is going, the Old Testament language of a brutal conformity is going.
Yeah.
The genuine apology, because you are in a certain formal relationship with your husband, the
friend. Right,
right. And I heard him so badly. A true, you know, there was a promise to be just one with one another.
Right.
And so it's understandable that he feels so hurt and violated by that.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You have the little one that's just carrying all this shame. So I just want to really clearly acknowledge all of these and the sense they all carry. In yourself, you don't need to choose between the one and the other. You actually really can't.
I can't, no.
And this is part of your dilemma in presenting yourself to Glenn.
Yeah, right.
Because you can genuinely apologize, you can genuinely recognize the hurt of that in the social context of marriage.
Yeah.
And you also don't completely buy into that as an only way to be, or even that what you did was wrong in terms of your own personal evolution.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But yet, and if I tried to explain that, he feels really furious because he thinks I'm walking back my apology. And he says the only reason we're together right now is because of that apology. He's read it like a dozen times, and that apology is the only thing keeping our marriage together, because he reads that apology and he thinks that we agree on what happened. But it's just this weird feeling, because I feel like, you know, we finally did have a conversation where I just, today, I feel better because I just said, it's been a few weeks now and I haven't talked about myself or justified myself in any way because it didn't seem appropriate. But, you know, to totally erase what I did and to just listen to him saying all these things about how sleazy I was and how awful and deceitful, and just have to sit there and not say anything, is, I'm not sure it feels so helpful. He read that book. Apparently, or he read a lot of that book. We got the book after the affair, yeah, and it kind of brought it all back on. And I think it was good, but it made him talk about it again. And, yeah, it's.
I hope you read the whole thing, because...
He said he skimmed the whole thing, but he didn't read any of the case studies. But
okay,
all right. I was hoping he'd read some of the case studies, because they're all about, like, people. A lot of them are about people who had an affair for 5 years, and mine was only, like, a few weeks, so I thought it would make him feel better, but of course it doesn't. We had a conversation about how, you know, once is just as bad as a lot of times, and he talked about sexual abuse and molestation, and, you know, he said it's... He thinks it feels analogous, like it's so traumatic for him. And just once is enough to be so painful. So, yeah, I believe all that. Anyway, so I'm just trying to... I feel like today, after this conversation, I'm becoming more aware that I need to... That I'm capable of holding both of these things. That I do apologize, but that, you know, I don't have to hate myself.
How about we switch up? You can even switch out the but there. I mean, and you're the wordsmith, I know, but and you can deeply apologize and you don't need to hate yourself.
I deeply apologize and I don't need to hate myself. And can I say I deeply apologize and I still think I did what I really needed to do?
If that is the truth, and you can.
But, yeah. And I also, and I don't want to do it again. I don't need to, but I want to have the kind of relationship where I can be honest. I mean, it feels like a catch-22 because he's saying I should have been honest and deceiving was the worst thing. And then clearly, if I were honest, he was saying he would have ended the relationship. And he says I should have had the courage to take the risk. I said, don't you think it might, you know, doesn't it make you feel better that I didn't want to throw away our relationship? And apparently it doesn't. Anyways.
I wonder, Andy, how much, I wonder if this, will just take more time.
Yeah, it's pretty early.
He's very raw, clearly. And of course, he's had these terrible traumas in the meantime.
Oh my gosh.
Physiologically, her body is really hurting.
Yeah.
Let me just ask, how is he?
He's okay. Today we're going to go to the 2-week checkup after surgery, and he's in a lot of pain, but he's definitely mending a bit. It's still going to be a lot.
So just putting that in context, when we're really unwell in our bodies, all the resilience we have, what we might call ego strength, of like the ability to hear another perspective, to understand if he's on any medication.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the whatever they're called, the strong ones, the prescription ones.
Yeah.
That also will really compromise his ability to understand.
Yeah, he's not on those. He didn't want to take those, so he's not doing it. But the other thing is that 20 years ago, when I had the other affair, I feel like we never finished the process as described in that book. You know, we kind of left it where we went to this therapist a long time, and she just basically made me understand that what I had done was really wrong and that I apologized. And that's as far as we got. And I felt it. You know, I felt really bad. But we never got to the stage of him. In fact, today was the first time I ever heard him say anything about that the state of our marriage might have had something to do with it, and that he might have learned something from it. Like, he says, I guess I could have handled some things better. He just said that today.
Good.
Yeah.
So crack is something there.
Maybe. For 20 years ago, yeah. But maybe it's because I'm also a little more willing to, I'm more willing to stand up for myself. And.
Well, no question.
Because,
you know, reading the book, or I get that this therapist that you just saw again for one session, right?
Yeah, and we're not getting it.
So she's what we might call very manager bound. You know, stick to the rules, do what is necessary.
The rules, right.
You know, and that's the manager function, right? In our own psyche, the managers, you know, kind of get us in line and, that. It's a function. So she seems very manager driven.
Yeah.
Perhaps even reading the book cracked open for him. What is the other perspective? What was missing in our marriage?
Yeah.
So that's a beautiful new little spring growth, I would say to you, that he's even articulating that.
Yeah.
Maybe there was something lacking in marriage. And that you are better able to stand up for yourself because
And
you've come too far. You've come too far not to know what you know about your part and who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I can't have such a disconnect between who I know I am in my artistic life, my life with my friendships, my teaching, all of these things. I really respect and honor myself. And then in my marriage, there's been this weird kind of dip because that's sort of stuck in 1985 in some ways, just in terms of my self-esteem and, you know, yeah, it's too much of a disconnect. I just don't want to hurt
you. Yeah, I'm just going to say one more time. I think you will need some patience here. Because
yeah.
I think he is smarting in his entire being right now. His ego, his sense of loyalty, his sense of security. He's fallen down and broken his leg on the subway out of nowhere. I mean, it's just his sense of well-being right now is extremely compromised.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying that very well may impact his ability to be listened to you, open to you, and hear your being.
But it kind of maybe, in some way it might help because he's been kind of a porcupine, very, very closed, or like a horse chestnut, like really hard to get through to him. He's so, you know, thorny and defensive and aggressive. I mean, I would say that's kind of... But then he says I'm making it up and projecting it onto him and I'm gaslighting him and he's not really like that. And, you know, I know that's probably true, that he's not as much like that as I think. But that's been the dynamic we had. So it's almost like it's easier to talk now maybe in some way because all the rules are open.
I see. So he's not quite so much of a horse chestnut?
No, he's crying. I've hardly ever seen him. In our whole marriage, I only saw him cry once before. And that was when I was, he was worried I was going to leave him in 1990 when I was having this traumatic experience. But other than that, I swear I never saw him cry again. And I've seen him cry so much in the last couple of weeks. Like, it's a whole different dynamic. And he's dependent on me. He needs to ask me to do things, whereas normally... He never asked for help in any way. So it's been a big change that, you know, maybe it makes it easier for us to talk. He keeps saying, you know, we should talk, like, do we want to talk about ethical non-monogamy? That's not really what I want at all. Like, I don't. It was just, but I...
What's that mean to you, that you would want?
I mean, I really am happy just being with him, but I would love a kind of relationship where we could talk about what just happened to me without it falling into this black and white judgment of ethical, you know, that I was so wrong. Like, just to have a mindset in which it's possible to talk about what happened and for him to listen with compassion, and he kept saying, what if it was reversed? And I said, I hope I would want to listen to you with compassion and understand why you did what you did and what it meant about our marriage and, you know, without judging you too much, like try to understand your point of view. Like, I hope I would want that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes,
it's easy to say. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say when it's in the abstract, but So, you know, what I was hoping was the kind of, like, a non-monogamous mindset of we don't own each other and we respect each other's freedom and we respect each other's choices, even if they might not fit in with the role of, you know, that we would at least be able to talk about it without saying, okay, that's it, the whole thing's over. But I don't know. So then he was saying, well, if we're going to do ethical non-monogamy, we need to have rules. And I know the way he is about rules. Like, if I say something like, I like fried eggs, then it's like every single morning it has to be a fried egg. Like, he gets a rule in his head. And I think a lot of men are like this. And I think a lot of women aren't really into rules. So I have this little theory that, you know, rules are the way men figure out how to handle themselves so that they can do what women want. But women don't really need rules. This is my theory. And so, you
it's
know...
It's a different... it's been studied some, and actually there is a different kind of a moral system
wow.
that women typically operate in, and that men, than men typically operate in.
And, okay, so maybe there is something... I mean... It feels that way to me. So he's saying, well, if we were going to do ethical monogamy, we'd need to have rules. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, wow, that means that we'd set out these rules and then he would follow them, which means he would start being unfaithful. And I don't know, you know, like, I don't really want to go down that road. Because
you want that road.
No.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do it either. And I don't intend to do it either. You know, but I just want to at least have a mind space that's a little less, you know, but again, it's just so hard to navigate. But anyway, yeah.
The mind space is more open.
Yeah. I mean, a better marriage where we can talk more honestly. We already are talking more honestly. But I so much of it is my own dignity and my own courage. And yeah, to find another way to be in a relationship with this man that's not based on, like, these Old Testament ideas that I have in my head. I would love that. Like, I would like to deal with that Old Testament part. It doesn't seem helpful. So much rage towards this part, like real incredible anger towards it.
Let's turn there first.
I mean, can I just express my rage to this part?
Well, express it to me.
Yeah, well, I just feel furious that I inherited this bullshit. I mean, a lot of it comes from my father, who was very authoritarian and entitled, and I just feel like I've spent most of my life, my whole life, you know, in its shadow, struggling with myself. And I went through all this period of time, or the New Testament too, for that matter. I went through this period of just trying to be so good and pure and perfect, and it was impossible, and just to have my ego get smaller and smaller and smaller when I had no ego to start with. I mean, I was so insecure, and yet I was trying to become even less than I was. And I bought the whole thing, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, I really wanted to fit in and be good according to that. And I'm just angry that I was so misled, and that, you know, that it thought it was good for me and it really wasn't. It was bad for me. It made me feel bad. It made me get confused. It made me hate myself. It made me despise myself, feel shame. It made me despise my natural impulses and my own strength. I mean, like, I'm just resentful and furious that I wasted so much time, and that I was so, you know, weakened by this. At a time when the world needs my strength, and so many other women too. Like, I don't even see anything good in it. honestly, I just see a lot of old bullshit that doesn't belong anymore, and yet it's in my head. Like, I feel it, or in my heart, I feel it inside me. It's so easy to just cast this phrase, cast out, you know? And then when I read about South Africa, and they tried to legalize polyandry, and they couldn't, they wouldn't do it for only this reason, because of the patriarchs. They literally said they wouldn't be able to tell who the father of the children was, and that was why. They would have to do DNA tests, and because of that, they're holding the double standard as the law. It's just so messed up. Like, being property. The thought that my body is property. It's just... I don't see how I could feel anything but rage.
Yeah. Really acknowledge that for you.
Yeah.
And then turn, can you sense the presence of the Old Testament part? Like, how do you feel that?
Yeah, there's this other part that's like, that still buys it. You know, that's not rage. That's feeling like, I want to be good. I want approval. I want to fit in. You know, I want to please my father or whatever. There's that part.
And how are you feeling towards this one?
Well, it's harder to feel separate from that part. Like, I guess I'm identifying with that part. Because I'm crying, I feel like crying. Like, I feel, but when I think how I feel towards that part, I just feel incredible pity and sort of horror. Like, she's like, you know, she's got Stockholm Syndrome or something. She's like this poor creature.
So just really, really let her know that you see her and you're really sorry for how hard all this is.
I'm really sorry for what?
How hard all this is.
Yeah. Yeah, I see her. Okay. Yeah, I feel this. She's like imprisoned. She's literally got her wrists or...
How old is she?
It's either 6 or 11. Yeah, I guess she's 11. The worst part is 11. Yeah. The part that
just really let you know, let her know you get her. And just see if she can show you or tell you how she picked up these voices. That Old Testament.
Yeah. She's literally shackled. Like, she has, you know, shackles on her. On her hand, on her arm, her wrist. And, I think it has to do with my sister, my older sister, Mary, who at the time would have been 14 or 15. And it was the way they treated her.
And what is she showing you?
That Mary's very strong and wild, and she wants to go out with boys. She wants to wear makeup. She wants to wear short skirts. She wants to go to New York City, and they're yelling. My father's yelling at her and shaming her, telling her, no daughter of mine is going to go out like that. You look like a slut, you know. You can't, just controlling her and shaming her because of her sexuality.
So you stay in touch with the 11-year-old in that case who is seeing all this. Just let her know you get it.
Yeah.
And see if there's anything else she wants to show you about thinking of that Old Testament, that be good, be perfect, be nice, be obedient.
Yeah. The poetry, she finds, you know, there's a poetry in that mindset. Because it's the only tradition that my father, you know, even though my father supposedly said he respected all religions, that's the tradition that really got him. And so there's this sense of like a mythic poetry to it. And she's also, you know, she can't help it. She's kind of seduced by that or hooked by that because she has no alternative. She has no other spiritual, you know, option. It's like the only one that has any resonance in the house. My mother does her best, but she kind of ended up with, you know, nothing or whatever. She couldn't really do much.
Yeah, so just that's important to get it, that her natural poetry sense took on a resonance with the poetry of the Old Testament.
Yeah, and of Christianity, and just the sort of poetic, cosmic feeling of the whole thing. Yeah, she got that. It was like the only mythology she had that anybody believed in. And my father did take some of it seriously. Yeah, it was beautiful poetry. Okay, she gets that. And then you combine that with the shaming of my sister.
It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
It does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because she wanted to be part of that, but it also meant that she was going to be hurt.
So just let me guide you, Annie, and ask her what beliefs she picked up about herself from this experience.
She picked up that she was basically evil, that she was dangerous, that she needed to be shackled if she was going to be good and not, you know, not cause trouble. She would have to, like, be neutered somehow, be restrained, be
Her natural sexuality had no right.
No, absolutely not. There was no right for her natural sexuality, none.
Right, and of course she's coming into puberty at that time.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's true.
Right. So how are you feeling towards her, as you understand?
Oh, yeah, I'm feeling so sorry for her. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's true. And then there was this boy that she really was friends with that she really liked, and he drowned. And, yeah, just... Yeah. Yeah, I really get it. What a confusing mess for her to be in.
Okay. So, Annie, just, you know what burden she picked up, that she's evil, she's dangerous, she needs to be shackled, she should be neutered. Just ask her if she would, well, ask first if she would like you to go back and join her in time and stand up for her.
Yes, she would love that.
Great. Just travel back to her.
Or stand up for her sister?
Whatever she wants you to do.
Yeah, because she couldn't stand up for her sister.
She couldn't?
No. She couldn't do that because she wouldn't... Then she would lose my father's support. And.
Well, she's way too little. She couldn't do that.
Yeah, no, she couldn't.
Could not do.
Yeah, so... Okay, so I'm going to go back there. Okay, and my sister's coming down the stairs, and my father's, like, screaming at her and shaking his finger, and she's screaming back at him. And so 11-year-old me is, like, hiding, doesn't know what to do, and so she wants me to go out there, and I'm standing there, and I get gigantic. I'm like this angel, like 15 feet tall angel, with a flaming sword and saying, you let her go, you silly man, you don't understand, be humble before the goddess, let her go, she's beautiful, she's strong, let her be free, she knows what she's doing, she's a wonderful, beautiful, amazing young woman, get back in your hole and keep your own business, don't tell women what to do, ever. An 11-year-old me is kind of laughing. 11-year-old me is like, yes.
Beautiful. Let her have that. Let her really have that moment.
Yeah, she loves it. And then she's laughing. And then I'm coming into her room, and I'm cutting the shackles off. I'm cutting the shackles. My sword is so hot. I touch them with the tip of the sword, and the shackles just melt away. They just melt away.
Yeah, and think she'd like to do anything with those belief burdens she picked up. Would she like to let go of them?
Yeah. She would like to. So yeah, she wants to. She likes the idea of making a little bonfire.
Okay. Just really help her do this.
We do it right in the middle of her floor. And just she's throwing them in one by one. Just the belief that she's dangerous. She's throwing that in. Just the belief that she's dirty. A belief that she has to be ashamed. She's throwing that one in. She's stomping around. She's discovering she has some fire, too. She's got some fire in her eyes, just like my sister.
Great. So just let her express any more of that she wants to express.
Okay. So she's stomping around the fire, and she's saying, I am proud, I am proud, I am strong, I am free, I am good, I am good, I am good, I am good. She's saying over and over, I am good, I am good, I am good, I am strong.
Yay! Yay! I am good, I am good, I am good. I'm good. I can imagine her sort of dancing that and stomping it.
Yeah, she is. Just stomping around, yeah. And then it's so beautiful. Yeah. And then I'm touching my sword to the middle of her ceiling, and all the flames and the wishes are going right out the roof of the house. So she really feels like they went out into the universe.
Beautiful, beautiful. And what else does she want to take into her? She's claimed I am good. What else does she want to take in? It's her birthright. It's her blueprint, her natural blueprint.
Yes.
What does she want to take in?
Yeah. That I am clear. She likes that. I am clear. I am clear. I believe in myself. I am clear. I believe in myself. I'm good. I'm strong and I'm free and I'm brave. I'm strong and I'm free and I'm brave. I'm clear. I believe in myself. And I feel joy. I love my body. I love my sexuality. I love my passion. I love every part of my body. I love my whole body. I love my pleasure. I'm so proud of my pleasure. I'm proud of my pleasure. I'm proud of my pleasure. I'm proud of my pleasure. That's what she's saying.
How are you feeling towards her?
That's wonderful. I'm delighted.
She seems so alive, doesn't she?
So alive.
I can see her seeing so alive.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna introduce the other parts to what's happened here.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the furious one. Has she seen what's happened?
Yes, she has.
And how does she feel about it?
It's good. She's not frustrated anymore. Now it's more like, let's get this done. Like, she's inspired. Yeah, she's inspired that it's okay that she doesn't have to feel so personally angry anymore. It can be angry in a wider way, just to change things, but not having to just feel that rage for the personal self. I think she's feeling that. Yeah, she's like, okay, I got it. Yep, all right, here we go.
Okay. Now, the Old Testament part, is it still there?
There's something, it's not a living part, but there's like this stone thing. There's like a sandstone kind of a shell kind of a thing.
Okay. All right. Ask it if it is a part of your system.
No.
It is not. No. Okay, great. So, Annie, you know, I'm just sort of hearing my ideas here to guide you next. Just tell us, okay, begin to release it to the light and see if it wants to go or not.
It was so fast. It's so fast. It's like already halfway there. It's like, phew, it just wants to go so badly to the light.
It wants to go to the light.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I put the tip of my sword on the roof, and because it's in the middle of her room. And so it's just going like right up through the roof, just that's beautiful.
Oh,
blaze
okay.
of light. It was so fast.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's just gone. This is beautiful. Now there's a lot more light and energy in her room.
Great, great, great. And how's the 11-year-old feeling with all this?
She's so happy. She's like, thank you for cleaning my room.
Are very interested in IFS, but don't have any access to all the trainings are completely full and it's not offered in their curriculum. I am wondering how you would feel about if you could give me the transcript of what we've done today, if you could send that to me somehow, and I would let them hear it.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know how to get a transcript out of it. That's my only issue. Like, I have
the
tape.
Well, let's not imagine any kind of written transcript.
Oh, just the tape, of course.
If you could get the tape to me.
Sure, I'd love to.
And with your permission.
Yeah.
Of course, I won't be disclosing your name. It will just be a voice thing.
Sure.
With your permission, sharing it as an example.
And I'm dying to get them published. So, you know.
That's beautiful. That's so. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Of course.
I'm really strongly encouraging them, and they get it. That you know that I had to unlearn a lot of my traditional training.
Yeah.
To learn how to do this IFS because it is so very different.
Yeah.
And I want to have them have exposure to what a therapy session on really big topics look like.
Yeah, that's wonderful. No,
that's from the IFS point of view.
I believe in it so much. I believe in your work so much, and I'm really happy to share it.
Absolutely.
And if they're young and if they maybe have an idea of a good way to get a written transcript out of it, you know, I'd be happy to hear that because I know there must be a way. I don't even know, but I'm just hoping to find somebody who wanted to transcribe all of them and be like a helper on the book or, you know, a co-author on the book would be amazing. Or, you know, just if somebody wanted to take that on, if you know anybody, just a thought. Because it could be an incredible apprenticeship to work with the transcripts.
Actually, it could be an incredible apprenticeship.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably...
Is that something you would be able to pay someone for? Because, of course, transcribing a lot of time.
Yeah, I think there might be some technology that does it, and then you have to go through it and correct it and clean it up. Mm. I think there's probably like 20 of them now.
20 sessions you record.
Yeah. So I don't think I have the money right now to do it, but I'm just wondering.
Anyway, don't worry about it.
If there's somebody who's like a student, you know, who might actually learn by doing that. Because it would be a way to get deeply into them, then they might be able to get.
It would be a way to get very deeply into it.
They might be able to get credit for it or something. That's what I'm hoping.
Fascinating idea. Well,
anyway, I'll send you this one. I'll send you this one.
Just let it be, and I thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And I'm so pleased with where we've been today.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much. So beautiful. Thank you.
Really, that was great work. I'm so excited for you.
I am too. Thank you so much. And if you want to hear any of the others, I'm happy to share them. I have no problem.